Unfiltered.
I'm not sold. I'm sorry.
Unapologetic.
I'm not trying to talk about them.
Unlike anyone else.
But knowing y'all.
Y'all will probably make me.
This is the Stephen A. Smith Show.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the latest edition of the Stephen A. Smith Show, coming at you as I love to do every weekday from 1 to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time over the airwaves of Sirius XM, Mad Dog Sports Radio, Channel 82. Number to call up, as always, is 888-MAD-DOG-6. That's 888-623-3646. Once again, that's 888-MAD-DOG-6. That's 888-623-3646. Also, if you want to send in your voicemail messages, just send it to go to SiriusXM.com/GetSerious. That's SiriusXM.com/GetSerious, and I'll make sure to let you holler at me. My apologies for not being here yesterday. I was with, just to let my audience know, my family know, Stephen A. Smith Show family, that I was with my daughter, and I had to take her someplace, and we got stuck in a location that where the SiriusXM studios obviously were not open because of the horrible weather over this past week. And so I wasn't able to get to a studio. And that was the reason that I was absent yesterday. But I'm back in the mix. Thanks again, to Carrington for filling in for me the way that he did. Always doing an exceptional job. Always appreciate him looking out for me. And, of course, the SiriusXM Mad Dog Sports Radio team led by Mr. Eric Spitz and the great Steve Torrey as well. So thank y'all so much. There's a lot of stuff to get into today, no doubt, because we've got a Super Bowl to discuss. We've got an AFC Championship and an NFC Championship game that just expired to discuss, courtesy of New England winning primarily because of a snowstorm, even though I thought they would have won anyway. But they beat the backup, that is Jarrett Stidham, which I absolutely wholeheartedly stated needed to happen and had better happen. I want to say this, though. Jarrett Stidham, to be a backup quarterback, let me tell y'all something right now. His wife didn't look like no backup, I'll tell you that much. I mean, that was a fly-ass coat she had on. That was spectacular. I mean, that was the wife of a Hall of Fame quarterback right there. I mean, the way that outfit, she was rocking. I mean, that main coat, she was right. It was special. You understand? She was in the suite, and he was doing his thing, threw that 52-yard bomb to Mims, scored the touchdown. After that, to Courtland Sutton, and looking like he was going to make some noise, and reality set in, and the weather set in, and ultimately the Denver Broncos weren't able to propel themselves to a victory over the New England Patriots. New England wins courtesy of a 10-7 victory, primarily because Jarrett Stidham turned over the football, throwing a chest pass in football. I thought that was reserved for basketball games. So he threw a chest pass, ultimately ruled a fumble. New England ultimately scored the touchdown because Drake May ran it in from 6 yards out. And then later on in the game, obviously Christian Gonzalez, who was a guest on this show last week, made the key interception to propel the New England Patriots to the Super Bowl. Super Bowl 60 in Santa Clara, California. And they're going back to the Super Bowl, the New England Patriots, for the first time since 2018, for the 10th time in the last 25 years, for the 12th time overall, the New England Patriots are in the Super Bowl. So that's America's team. That's what America's team is all about. Give them props where it's due. In the case of Seattle, Sam Darnold was sensational. There's no other way to slice it. Completed 69% of his passes, threw for over 300, threw for about 346 yards, threw about 3 touchdowns, hit Bobo, hit Cooper Kupp. Obviously, Smith and Jigba, it was a spectacular performance on Sam Darnold, and people like myself and others got to stand down, bow down, because this brother has proven to be a sensational quarterback, just doing his thing. 29-4 against everybody else in the National Football League over the last 2 years, was 1-3 going up against the Los Angeles Rams coming into this game. Obviously ended up winning because he outdueled, to some degree, Matthew Stafford, the eminent league MVP, threw 3 touchdowns himself, threw for over 374 yards himself, had a QBR rating of 127.6 himself to Sam Darnold's 127.8. Wasn't Matthew Stafford's fault they lost. He played like a champion. He played like a future Hall of Famer. He played like one of the elite passers this game had ever seen. And Puka Nacua was doing his thing as well. Devontae Adams made his contribution. It's just that you can't make those turnovers. Your defense couldn't get a stop. And also, this cat Xavier Smith, botched the punt and fumbled. And ultimately, Seattle scored a touchdown on the very next play, putting them up 10. And the Los Angeles Rams are playing it with their back against the wall. I think if that hadn't happened, Los Angeles wins this game. I think but there was a couple of things, a lot of ifs and all of this other stuff. I think that if Sean McVay had elected to kick the field goal, I understood his point, and it wasn't a bad thing. He was going for the jugular. He knew his defense couldn't get a stop to save their lives. He understood the way his defense has been looking over the last several weeks. But I still believe if you're up if you're down 31-27 and you got an opportunity to hit a gimme shot to pull you within 31-30, there is a chance that you'll get the football back. Maybe Seattle would have driven downfield for at least a field goal, if not a touchdown, and then you would have had to score again. I understand that. But what if you had stopped with a 31-30 lead and you had been in a position where all you needed was a field goal? Then that's Sam Darnold with Nacua and Davante Adams and the crew that would have been in prime position in order to win this game. And then your tight end dropped that first down pass. So that was a problem in and of itself. In the end, I didn't think that Sean McVay called nearly as bad of a game as he called against Chicago. But nevertheless, it wasn't good enough. It came up short. And the team that I wanted to be in the Super Bowl, because I think that the Rams offense deserves to be in the Super Bowl, and I think it would be very entertaining to see them in the Super Bowl, it was not meant to be. That 12th man in Seattle, which I've been telling y'all about for the longest time, not that you didn't know, but I kept reiterating that point. That's what made that regular season finale between the two, as far as them going up against one another, so pivotal, because whoever won that game was going to get the top seed out of the NFC West, and they were going to have home field advantage. And the likelihood is that if this game was at SoFi Stadium instead of in Seattle, that the Los Angeles Rams would be in the Super Bowl instead of Seattle having that 12th man available to them and being able to propel themselves to victory. But it wasn't meant to be. And in the end, a guy like Mike Donald has proven to be an exceptional coach. The defense is all world. Sam Darnold can play even without Charbonnet, who went down with the ACL injury out of the running back spot and led them in touchdowns. You still had Kenneth Walker III going out doing his thing and running the football effectively. And Jigba is a superstar wide receiver. There is no doubt about that. And then you look at Bobo and you look at Cooper Kupp and the contributions that they made. You can't say enough about Seattle and what they brought to the table in the end. Bottom line is simple. The Seattle Seahawks are a worthy, worthy team, deserving of all the credit in the world. Sam Darnold, it starts with him and what he's been able to do from that quarterback spot. And Ernest Jones, who's been sticking out his chest and bloviating about Sam Darnold all year long, deserves all the credit in the world for highlighting the level of credit that his quarterback deserved. And as a linebacker, talking about your quarterback that way, it says a lot. And Sam Darnold backed up and validated all the faith that the Seattle Seahawks have shown in him. As an aside, I want to spend a moment to give some love to DeMarcus Lawrence, because this brother was a member of the Dallas Cowboys the previous 11 years. Now, we all know how I feel about Dallas Cowboy fans, right? The most disgusting, nauseating fan base in American history. No matter how much their stuff stinks, no matter how many times they flop in the playoffs, no matter how many times they have a sorry regular season, you know we're going to win the Super Bowl next year, right? No, we're going to the Super Bowl next year, right? But it wasn't meant to be. Didn't happen, okay? And the minute this man departs from Dallas, he goes to Seattle, and here he is in a Super Bowl. Remember, Dallas Cowboys haven't been in an NFC Championship game since 1996. So you got Lawrence that was sitting there suffering as a member of the Dallas Cowboys all of those years. He goes to Seattle with Leonard Williams and the crew, and they are in the Super Bowl year one. Major, major props to him. Happy for him. He deserves it because he's been a big-time player for years. He shows up, and he obviously helps propel them to a Super Bowl berth as well. I think they're going to win the Super Bowl personally. I'm not going to wait 2 weeks for suspense or anything like that. I don't think New England has the offense to beat the Seattle Seahawks. That's just my personal opinion. Drake May has been very impressive. He's a top two candidate for league MVP honors. There's no doubt about it, okay? But I don't believe there's a snowball's chance in hell that New England's offense is formidable, even with Josh McDaniels as the offensive coordinator calling plays against that Seattle defense. I just don't see it. I just don't see it. I see Seattle winning this game. I see Sam Darnold likely winning Super Bowl MVP. And I see the Seattle Seahawks avenging a loss that should have never happened in a Super Bowl years ago, when Pete Carroll and Darrell Bevell, as the offensive coordinator, decides to ignore beast mode, who got them where they were in the second half, balling out all world style. And then they're at the half-yard line, and they don't call his number. And instead, they call for Russell Wilson to throw a pass that was intercepted by Malcolm Butler. I'm here to tell you right now, it was that was the end of the Legion of Boom. It was the end of Seattle as we knew it. It was the end of Pete Carroll being seen as an elite coach. All of that came to an end in one fell swoop. And Darrell Bevell will never recover from that, because how the hell do you call that play in the Super Bowl from the half-yard line? They haven't been able to live it down, and they don't deserve to live it down. But this is a different Seattle team, and as a result, they're going to be in a position. They're going to be the favorites for the Super Bowl. They're already the favorites, and I personally think that they're going to get it done. Let me move on to some news. for this opening monologue because the Buffalo Bills have a new head coach. The Buffalo Bills' new head coach is offensive coordinator Joe Brady. Now, Joe Brady has been there for the last couple of years. If you remember, he replaced Ken Dorsey, who was fired as offensive coordinator. And Joe Brady was named and promoted on November 14th, 2023. Since that time, the Bills have the best record in the National Football League, and they rank first in efficiency per play. They were 31-10, which was number one. They averaged 29.1 points per game, which was second. And efficiencies per play, 0.14, which is first in the National Football League. Joe Brady, some would argue, the perfect place for him to have gone was to Cincinnati because of his history with Joe Burrow from their days at LSU. But the bottom line is this. Joe Brady has been in Buffalo the last couple of years. Obviously, McDermott was a defensive-minded coach. Joe Brady was their offensive coordinator, who's done a hell of a job. There's no way around that. And to look at him and see him getting this opportunity, nobody can argue with it. It was the right call. He's perceived as having a very, very close relationship with Josh Allen, who was a part of the interview process, and the coaches that got interviewed, he was right there with them, all right? So it's what it is. Allen turns 30 in May. He was obviously intimately involved in the coaching search, sitting in on the interviews, according to the reports. General manager and president of football operations, Brandon Bean, led the search, of course. Pegula, his daughter, Laura Pegula. Pegula's the owner, Terry Pegula. His daughter, Laura Pegula, the director of business operations, along with assistant general managers and what have you, were all a part of the process. But this came down to the combination of them and mainly Josh Allen and what he felt, because he's the face of the franchise. It's just that simple. And he's an absolute stud, and he needed to be involved in this mix. He has to improve his performances in the playoffs, no doubt about it. But let's not act like he shouldn't have been involved in the process, and let's not act like the wrong decision was made. The right decision was made. Joe Brady deserved to be the head coach, okay? Obviously, I don't feel that way about the Pittsburgh Steelers. Mike McCarthy is the new head coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers. And on behalf of Steeler Nation, I'm not moved. I'm not moved. We're not going to disrespect Mike McCarthy by using the word disgust. He doesn't deserve that. He's been a damn good coach in the National Football League. He's won 61% of his games. He's won a Super Bowl championship. He's coached his team to numerous berths to the NFC Championship game when he was with Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers as his coach. The problem is a few things. Number one, Mike McCarthy departed 2018 or so. And if you remember when he departed, there was talk about how his offense was a bit archaic. It was talked about Aaron Rodgers ignoring his plays, audibling at the line of scrimmage, etc. And essentially, the relationship was considered somewhat toxic because, according to the reports, Aaron Rodgers considered the play calling, quote unquote, low IQ. So that was problematic. He ends up losing his job in Green Bay. He ends up getting the job in Dallas, and they had some successful times in his 5 years there. Back-to-back-to-back 12-win-plus seasons, no doubt, but never got to a conference finals. Never got to the NFC Championship game with Dak Prescott as your quarterback. So my point is, you've coached Green Bay, you've coached Dallas, now we're talking about the Pittsburgh Steelers. If Aaron Rodgers had lost faith in you, even though y'all relationship is pretty good now, and Dak Prescott was somebody that you couldn't get over the hump. Why the hell should the Pittsburgh Steelers believe in you? Meaning Steeler Nation. I mean, this is a lateral move. And then, you know, he's 62. Ladies and gentlemen, they found Chuck Knoll in his 30s. He was there for 23 years. They found Bill Cowher at age 35. He was there for 15 years. They found Mike Tomlin there at age 35. He was there for 19 years. I mean, come on. I'm looking at that and I'm saying to myself, you got to be kidding me. You got to be kidding me. That's 57 years they've had three coaches. In 57 years, catching them all in their 30s, building around them, having them as staples of the community, and you give us Mike McCarthy? Mike McCarthy. You ain't been to the Super Bowl since 2010. You had Aaron Rodgers and Dak Prescott. You couldn't get over the hump with them. We don't know what the hell's going to happen with Aaron Rodgers, whether he's going to continue to play at the age of 42. He turns 43 in December. Or whether or not he's going to do so, he's going to retire. And then to listen to the message from Art Rooney II, who basically is the chairman since 2017. He was the president before that, even though Dan Rooney was running the show as the chairman. I mean, there's nothing to write home about. But I felt that the quotes from Art Rooney II were egregious. I mean, did you see his quotes? I'm paraphrasing here. You know, we ain't worried about what people are thinking and what people are feeling. You'll see when the games get played. What are we going to see that we haven't seen from Mike McCarthy? What are we going to see with this Steelers roster? Defense hasn't been great. DK Metcalf is not your true number one. What are we going to see? I mean, this is just some nauseating stuff. And you're still a nation. You don't play. You don't come watch them for free. You're a paying customer. You haven't won a playoff game since 2016. Steeler fans don't deserve better than this. From what Art Rooney II bloviated about? Like you're supposed to have faith in him? They're 0-6 since he's been running the team in the postseason. You got a GM in Omar Khan that's giving you a defense that spent over $160 million. $160 million. And they weren't that good. You let Pickens walk out the door and become a Cowboy. What are we talking about here? What are we really, really talking about? So to me, I'm not happy about this at all. Let me be very, very clear about that. I'm not happy about this at all. I wasn't happy about college football staying with a 12-team playoff. I want them to go up to 16 to 20 teams personally, but that's a different story for later on in the show. But nothing ticked me off more than the Steelers and Art Rooney's statement were very, very dismissive of Steeler Nation. Very dismissive. What have you given them to really, really care about? Mike McCarthy is a damn good coach. You know what he's good enough to do? Keep you mediocre. So we'll go and we'll finish 9-8, or we'll finish 10-7. We'll be middle of the road, so we ain't going to be good enough to compete for a championship, but we're not going to suck enough to position ourselves high in the draft so we can get a quarterback finally. Instead of having to beg a 42-year-old to come back or hope that Will Howard would develop so we don't have to look at Mason Rudolph as a savior. I mean, you got to be kidding me. This is what they've done. This is what they've done. Steelers have the entire offseason. The Steel City has the entire offseason to think about the Steelers moving forward. And they have the entire offseason to remind themselves there's nothing intriguing about this hire. More of the same. You're going to let Mike Tomlin walk out the door. You don't replace him with no Mike McCarthy. Find another Mike Tomlin. Who had big-time success before 2016 and never had a losing season in his 19-year career. Triple A Mad Dog takes the number to call up this 888-623-3646. Last point before I go to commercial break. If you look on the list, NFL head coaches, there were 10 openings. 7 have been filled. The Giants hired John Harbaugh. The Dolphins hired Jeff Hafley, defensive coordinator out of Green Bay. The Titans hired Robert Saleh. Lebanese descent, defensive coordinator for the San Francisco 49ers, former head coach for the New York Jets. The Falcons hired former Cleveland Browns head coach Kevin Stefanski. The Ravens hired Jesse Minter. The Steelers, as you saw, were McCarthy. Minter used to be in Baltimore years ago before he departed and was serving as a defense coordinator in the Chargers. And now you got McCarthy and now Joe Brady. Ladies and gentlemen, there's 3 hires to fill: Arizona, Cleveland, and Las Vegas. We can debate whether or not Deion Sanders needs to be the next head coach for the Cleveland Browns, if you like. Here's the big things I need y'all to understand. There's only one non-white coach that was hired. Of the seven openings, six were filled by white men, and one was filled by a non-white individual of Lebanese descendant, Robert Saleh. Not a single black coach was hired. And in the year 2025, years, decades after the Rooney Rule was inserted and implemented, and it was supposed to be so folks could get a fair shake and a fair shot, there are now three black head coaches in the National Football League. Three. That's it. Just three. And so I look at it from that standpoint, and it's not really a good feeling. Now, I know there's some people out there that's listening on the radio, and I just, you know, recently heard somebody called up to complain to Sirius XM because I brought that up. I want to be the first to say I could give less than a damn. It ain't too many black radio hosts, particularly in prime positions like I am. And when I notice the paucity of African-American coaches, I'm going to say something about it. I'm not going to belabor it. I'm not going to spend 2 hours or 2 weeks on it or anything like that. But I am going to mention it because there's a lot of qualified black coaches in the profession. And they're not the ones getting the opportunity. And what really stands out in my mind is, dare I say, the word nepotism. Because as I'm sitting here thinking about it, and I've got my researchers putting some notes together, okay? Some of the top remaining head coaching candidates outside of Vance Joseph, defense coordinator in Denver, there's still a lot of nepotism. How would I say this? Where would this come from? These coaches are damn good, and if they get the job, they deserve it. I understand it. I'm not questioning their qualifications at all. I'm just simply pointing out the discrepancy. One of the big-time coaching candidates is Rams defensive coordinator Chris Shula. He happens to be Don Shula's grandson, the late, great coach of the Miami Dolphins, the great coach of the Miami Dolphins, I'm sorry. Coach Dan Marino's a boy. Coach Bob Greasy coached the undefeated season in 1972, all of that stuff. His father's David Shula, who was the head coach of the Bengals at one time. You know Matt LaFleur, the head coach for the Green Bay Packers? Did you know his brother is the offensive coordinator for the Los Angeles Rams, who just lost in the AFC title game? Did a damn good job, by the way. But he's a coaching candidate for the job. And, of course, Seattle's offensive coordinator is a guy by the name of Clint Kubiak. That happens to be Gary Kubiak's son, former head coach for the Denver Broncos. Just pointing that out. All three of those guys deserve consideration. And if they end up getting the job, I want to be the first to say, congratulations. But that will be 10 openings. And not a single African-American will have been hired. In the year 2025, I'd like to be the first to say that's alarming. No Brian Flores, no Vance Joseph, no Anthony Weaver with the Dolphins, no primetime. Just a thought. Just a thought. 888-MAD-DOG-6 is always the number to call up. That's 888-623-3646. You are listening live to the Stephen A. Smith Show, Sirius XM, Mad Dog Sports Radio. Please don't go away. Coming up, your phone calls, your voicemail messages, of course, but not before I have on my colleague at ESPN, former member of the New England Patriots, the one and only Jason McCourty, coming on to brag about his New England Patriots team going to Super Bowl 60. He's up next. Stick around, because I'll be getting to the phone shortly after. You're listening live to Stephen A., Sirius XM, Mad Dog Sports Radio, back with more in a minute.